You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve, with my little pal Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who helps keep the alternative medicine wackos at bay. This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call. 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. If you're listening to us live, the number is 754-227-3647. That's 754-22-PENIS. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine at DrScottWM. Visit our website at weirdmedicine.com or drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Go to our merchandise store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, or whatever. So very good. Don't forget, with the holidays coming up, use stuff.drsteve.com for all of your holiday shopping needs. That's stuff.drsteve.com. Don't forget tweakedaudio.com. Offer code FLUID for 33% off. The best earbuds on the market for the price and the best customer service anywhere. Don't forget Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net, simplyherbals.net. And, you know, last time I talked to you about canceling your premium subscription. Don't do that. I changed my mind. I was depressed and I wanted to just shut it all down, and I'm better now. So premium.drsteve.com, $1.99 a month. I know, I'm crazy, all right? Just, I try not to let you guys see my insanity, but I'm a little crazy. But for $1.99 a month, you get all the archives and you can support Weird Medicine. It's pretty easy to do. A lot cooler than Patreon, in my opinion, mainly because you can go get the app at the App Store or at Google Play. And you have access to everything right there. So premium.drsteve.com will get you set up. All right, very good. Tell your story first. Your doggy was sick.
Yeah, my little pup Chewy was sick. She had she woke up about 2 weeks ago with and couldn't swallow. She had no appetite, and I started poking around. She had a big fluid filled cyst under her chin, right on her throat. Poking around.
Submandibular cyst.
The submandibular cyst, right. So first thing I thought of was maybe a tooth abscess, maybe a salivary stone.
Yeah.
And I was hoping for not a lymphoma, quite honestly. That was my biggest concern.
Yeah.
But a couple, you know, trips to the vet and $1,000 later, she ate today for the first time.
So it wasn't lymphoma.
We don't think so. And we did another fine needle biopsy yesterday. And still the pathology has been nonspecific, which normally we think is going to be an infection. And she is responding, thankfully, to some little amoxicillin shots because she's just a little thing. And I put her on some dexamethasone to get some of the swelling out and to increase her energy. And she's doing a little bit better. So she's peeing by herself. And
yep.
Today she ate for the first time in 2 weeks. So we're pleased.
Well, the list of things that a submandibular cyst could be. Includes, as you said, sialolithiasis, which is
stone
in the salivary gland. So sialo pertaining to saliva or salivary, and lithiasis pertaining to stone. Mucus retention cysts like mucus seals, And then epidermal inclusion cysts, which are like sebaceous cysts.
Right.
But then there are these things like a thyroglossal duct cyst, branchial cleft cyst. These are all congenital things that could have been there all along and only just now recently filled up with fluid.
Which would be my guess, because she's as little as she is, she's always had a little bit of trouble breathing.
Yeah, yeah, really.
That makes sense. Okay. That would make the most sense.
And you wouldn't, you know, you might not notice it because you're not feeling around your dog's submandibular region until there's a problem. I've had people come in to see me that say, hey, doc, you know, I've got this mass in my chest and you feel, and it's at the bottom of their sternum. I recommend everybody do this right now, man or woman. You can feel it. You feel right on your breastbone in the middle of the front of your chest and work your way all the way down to the bottom. Mm-hmm. You'll feel this knob down there, and that is called the xiphoid process. And you can push it in. It's stuck with cartilage.
That's right.
So it's and
it's supposed to wiggle a little bit.
Yeah, it wiggles. Yeah. And I've had people come in going, doc, I've got a tumor in my abdomen. And they're all freaked out. They've been worried about it for weeks. They finally got up enough guts to come in and see me. Mm-hmm. And I get to set their mind at ease immediately. That's your xiphoid process. You know what? You've had it your whole life.
Right.
You just never noticed it before.
Yep.
That shit happens.
All the time.
You know.
So, yeah, my gut feeling is that that's exactly what happened. I think she's probably had this for a while. And for whatever reason, maybe a little infection, that fluid just ballooned up overnight.
Yeah.
So, heck, yeah, we're much, much, much happier.
Good.
Mommies and good. Daddies today.
Very good. Very good.
So, thank you.
All right. Well, I had talked last week about stopping the premium service on our podcast. And I think I'm changing my mind about that. I'll explain to everybody. I've been kind of intimating about the end of Weird Medicine. And it may still happen, but I'm hoping that we can work something out, because what was really happening was I was going to change jobs. And my new job didn't appreciate my extracurricular activities. I mean, you can go, if you really do a deep search, it doesn't take that much, you can find a picture of me, you know, leaning on that prostate exam simulator, which really just looks like a big rubber rectum and with testicles and a penis hanging off of it. And I use that to teach not only Jim Norton, but Eliza Schlesinger how to do a prostate exam.
Right.
And it's a real piece of medical equipment.
Right.
But when you've got, you're sort of leaning with your right elbow on the back of this thing, and the picture just shows this buttocks with rectum and testicles and a penis hanging down, and then you've got this goofy look with a thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't look, it looks bad.
Yeah, right. Awkward.
So, but I've decided I'm not going to be embarrassed of what we do here. I look back, the topics that we cover, sure, we treat them in a lighthearted way, but, you know, it's, we're doing serious stuff. Even the vodka tampon, which would be the thing, well, yikes. Mm-hmm. First, we didn't do it without consent. Mm-hmm. And it was in the interest of science, in the interest of getting people not to do that, not to do stupid things. Mm-hmm. And but everything else that we talk about is serious medical stuff, influenza.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Often it has to do with the rectum or the bowels or something like that, but that's part of the human body. People are interested in that too.
Yep. Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, you think about how many times we hear questions about erectile dysfunction.
Sure.
And constipation.
Who else is going to answer these questions?
Right. I mean, we do it every day, and it helps people a bunch. It tells them which direction to go instead of, you know, not doing anything.
Yep.
And letting it get to a terrible place, or running to the emergency department. The emergency department saying, gosh, you don't need to be here.
Right. Don't go to the ER.
That's why you have a family medicine doctor, et cetera.
So. Now we're just sort of patting ourselves on the back, but we have saved lives on this show.
Very much.
We have had every time we do the October. Oh, we missed October. Usually in October, we tell everyone how to check their stupid nuts for lumps, because we say that at the end of every show. And we need to do that today. So please don't let me forget as soon as we're done patting ourselves on the back. But every time we do that, we'll have two or three people email us, hey, I found something, and yeah, I went to the doctor, and that's what it was, and thank you for making me do that. And so, but anyway. And I have been a little depressed about this show in the sense that I've been a little just bummed about it ever since GVAC died. It's not been the same. And I listened to the shows that he was on when, you know, it was all of us together, and they just seemed a little more lively, but that's okay. You know, we're getting old and sad, and we're going to die soon. So why do a fun, uplifting show? So I think I'm okay with that too. But it is, I mean, every time we do this show, I'm looking at him over your right shoulder because we got a big poster of him up on the wall.
I know.
So I miss that son of a bitch.
Well, I do too. Terrible.
But anyway, all right. So there we are. You want to answer some medical questions?
Let's do it.
Number one thing. Don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right. Well, I won't. Let's see what we got here.
When I was younger, you eat steak fries.
What?
You try not to eat them. Hello. Is there any related or underlying conditions where possibly old age or GERD regarding when you eat steak fries? This never happened years ago. When I was younger, you eat steak fries. You try not to eat them too fast. You're probably not eating them more rapidly than normal, and you're hydrated, but you feel like the starch builds up. You feel like almost like there's something in your throat, but it's chewed up. It's not there. Is there any supplements that can help that, or is there any underlying medical thing like GERD or something else or older age?
I'm assuming he's talking about what happens to me if I go to a certain very popular chicken place and I eat their fries, their big waffle fry things. Mm-hmm. And then if I try to eat something after that, I'll feel like they're stuck in my esophagus. And they are. Mm-hmm. They're actually – because we – first off, these things are too damn big. Steak fries are gigantic. Mm-hmm. And then you've got all this starch. It's just starch. It's just a polymerized sugar. Mm-hmm. And it's mushy. And we eat too fast. And so we swallow it. And then it piles up in the esophagus just before it gets into the stomach. Mm-hmm. Some of it doesn't get all the way in there, and it'll just kind of sit there. Mm-hmm. And the only supplement that's going to get rid of that is to drink water or something after, you know, something warm afterward to just wash it down stomach.
Right.
Now, a million years ago, I heard the story of a lady that broke her hip because she had what we would term an esophageal stricture. So this wasn't normal narrowing of the esophagus as it goes into the stomach. She had scarring from reflux esophagitis. Right.
Barrett's esophagus.
Yeah, well, she may have had a Barrett's, but she had scarring.
Right, right.
And the scarring caused a narrowing of the esophagus.
Right.
And so when she would eat, food wouldn't go all the way in. Well, in the beginning, it would pile up in her esophagus. She could jump up and down and get it to go down.
Wow.
Then she had to get up on one stair. You know, she had steps going up to the second floor. She'd get on one step and jump off of that. Oh. And then it got to where she needed to go up two flights of stairs.
Oh, gosh.
And by the time she got up to four and was jumping, she fell and broke her hip.
Oh, bless
her. So an esophageal stricture resulted in a woman breaking her hip.
Yeah.
If you have that, you should get scoped.
Sure.
It's a real simple procedure. They give you some goofy juice. They tell you don't eat after midnight. Don't eat or drink after midnight. You go in with an empty stomach. They give you some goofy juice. They say, count back from 10. You go 10, and that's it.
Good night.
And the next thing, right. You go 10, and then, wow, I'm waking up. They didn't do anything.
When are they going to do this?
Yeah, when are they going to do it?
Yeah.
And you'll feel fine, but you're not, so you need to get somebody to drive you. But it's really is as simple as that. They can look down there and make sure that this narrowing is normal for you, and it's not something more serious. Mm. So,
well, and while they're in there, they can do the little stretching. They can do an esophageal stretching.
If they find a narrowing, they can stretch it out. You can swallow normally again.
Yeah, and typically they'll have to do that. If you keep that up, they'll have to do it regularly. But still, yeah, that beats the heck out of having to jump up and down to get your food to go down.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's tough.
So, but it is really common, particularly with steak fries or big giant waffle fries from a fast food chain that I won't mention their name, but they know who they are.
Right on.
They're good,
but
though.
But, you know, Dr. Steve,
they're good stuff.
But, you know, I think a lot of people get that from other things. They're a little bit harder to chew up. Sometimes red meats can give you the same kind of swallowing issue. So just the
Well, you tend to eat smaller bites of that.
Right.
And then if it gets stuck, you drink something, it goes down. Okay. But when you're eating fries, you're just going one after another.
And it just swells up.
Yeah, and it just piling up in there. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this big bolus of French fry.
Glob. Just throw some ketchup in there, you'll be fine.
That reminds me, I had a friend, and she did a rotation in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And one of the she was in some village in the Philippines, and when she left, they threw a party for her. And what they did was they roasted a pig, and one of the delicacies was something called blood sausage. It's a little different than like Irish blood sausage. So what they did was they fed the pig corn. I don't know if they force fed it like they do for foie gras,
right?
You know,
sure.
But they fed it corn. And then when they, killed it, they took out its small intestine, and it was full of corn. And they tied that off and threw it in the fire. And then that was blood sausage.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was pig intestine cooked. It was cooked.
With sweet corn.
With corn, which actually sounds like it might not be so bad. If it was crispy on the outside and corny on the inside, it might be pretty good.
Oh, my word.
I have the other Filipino friends that wanted me to try something called balut. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I don't think so.
Balut is a duck egg that's been fertilized, so it's an embryo as opposed to an egg. You know, the yolk really isn't the embryo. People say, oh, you're eating
baby chickens.
You're not. The actual embryo might be one, or, you know, egg is one cell in the middle of that yolk. Or on the surface or somewhere. But the yolk is just there to feed it, to give it energy so it can grow. Because they don't have a placenta, obviously, because the egg is outside the chicken's body. So they got to have something that will
nutrients, make it grow.
Right, exactly right. So, but this thing is partially formed duck embryo, and you eat them whole. And it's supposedly it's a delicacy. I've never tried it.
Hmm.
But anyway.
Wow.
Yep. Balut.
Balut.
Kumusta ka to all my Tagalog-speaking friends. Mabaho ang kili-kili mo. That means you have bad B.O.
That makes sense.
And then malaki susu mo. That means you have an advantageous TTGR.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I need to remember that then.
Cool. All right. Putangina mo. That means you son of a bitch. In Tagalog, so that's your lesson for the day.
I got it.
Let me teach you another word that's very useful in Hindi, and this is the same in Urdu as well. Bakwaz.
Bakwaz.
Can you imagine what bakwaz might mean? Just think of the sound of it. What bakwaz. It might mean.
God.
Oh, bakwaz.
Oh,
bakwaz. It's bullshit.
Oh, bullshit.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's the greatest word. I find myself saying bakwaz instead of bullshit. Well, first off, because you don't get in trouble saying that in the middle of the hall.
Right. Around the
certain people. It's just such a great word because it's like an onomatopoeia in the sense that it sounds like what it means.
Right.
You know?
Ah, bakwaz.
Bakwaz.
I love it.
All right. Here we go. Well, what in the hell is going on with this thing today?
Barometric pressure changes throwing off.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is John.
Hey, John.
I'm from Rhode Island. I've got an issue with sweating, hands and armpits. It appears to be seasonal. It appears to be in the fall, the worst, to the point where I will soak through, you, know, three shirts, the armpits of three shirts. And I'm wondering if this could be caused by caffeine intake before I attempt that and go through the withdrawals.
Hmm.
I do drink a few cups of coffee a day, so I'm hoping you can help me out. Thanks.
Wow, that's an interesting question. He kind of took a left turn there.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
You can get coffee sweating.
Sure.
That's caused from drinking excess caffeine, but he's not. And he's probably drinking the same amount. He says it only happens in the fall.
Seasonal, right. That was a big clue right there.
And but I bet he's drinking the same amount of coffee the rest of the year, so that doesn't make sense.
One thing.
So I don't think that's it. He just has garden variety hyperhidrosis.
Right.
But
seasonal, though. That's the interesting part, you know.
Well, I do notice that for whatever reason that I seem to sweat more when it turns cold. Mm-hmm. In my armpits and stuff, and I think it's just because I'm wearing heavier
clothes. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about the hand thing, but the treatment is pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to stuff.drsteve.com and scroll down, and there is a iontophoresis machine that actually works. We vetted everything that's on there, and for whatever reason, passing a very mild current through the hands will stop them from sweating. Now, it's harder to do that in the armpits. You can do it. They make pads to do that with, but it's less convenient.
A little stingy.
And so I would just use Maxim. You can buy Maxim deodorant also through stuff.drsteve.com. Maxim deodorant is and by the way, before anybody at SiriusXM freaks out, it's just a page that's got a link to it to get this stuff. We're not selling anything. Mm-hmm. You can get this Maxim. It's prescription strength deodorant, but now it's over the counter. And you can use that on your armpits and then use the iontophoresis for the hands. Now, they do make medications for this. There's one called glycopyrrolate. Glycopyrrolate is an peripherally acting anticholinergic medication. Ooh.
Bingo. That's half the lipitol.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. What it means is it doesn't get into the central nervous system, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's anticholinergic, like Benadryl. Benadryl causes dry mouth and other, you know, sleepiness and stuff, but that's the central effects.
Mm-hmm.
This glycopyrrolate causes all the peripheral effects, the ones that don't get into the central nervous system. So it doesn't make you sleepy, but it will dry up your sweat and maybe give you some dry mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you can get that from your primary care physician or a dermatologist. They also sell other things like, what is the stuff? Is it Tamsulosin? Is that right? It's Hytrin, whatever the generic for Hytrin is. And terazosin.
Terazosin, yeah. Tamsulosin's prostate.
Yeah, that's right, right, right.
Yeah.
Terazosin. Mm. And it also will reduce this to a certain extent, works for some people.
Mm.
The really severe cases of hyperhidrosis, where people are just dripping sweat off their hands, sometimes they'll do a sympathectomy on them. And what that is, where they go in and cut the sympathetic nerves to the hand. But I tell you, do that as a last resort only if nothing else works, because a lot of times when you do that, for whatever reason, you start sweating somewhere else.
Right.
It's almost like the body needs it.
Right. Finds another exit.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got anything from the traditional Chinese standpoint for this?
There are a couple old Chinese herbal formulas, and we would say it's an excess of heat.
Okay.
And so we would and that's what it is. We'd give you something to cool everything off to try to turn down the thermostat a little bit, if you will. And the other thing is too, you know, we would look at it as if it is in fact seasonal, if it is related to maybe changes in work environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he's in a much drier environment because they've turned the heat on or something or whatever.
Right.
We would go through that stuff. But yeah, there certainly are. If some of the Western medications don't work, certainly there are some old Chinese herbal formulas that can be beneficial.
What about sticking needles in? Does it do anything for sweating?
Not a whole lot. Now we'll
but when you
use,
put that current through it, I was thinking it's sort of like iontophoresis.
But we will do that with the stem, with the TENS unit.
Yeah.
And actually put it under the axilla, the armpits, and we'll put it in the palms. It's funny.
That makes sense that would work.
And
you're putting current through it.
Yeah, we run it. We call it, it's called the five Hart's EN deficiency, and that's what it is. It's a hyperhidrosis. It's just translated into that.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I would put, and instead of using traditional needles, I'd use probably one of my pads, but use a frequency unit or a TENS unit or something.
Yeah.
So,
that makes sense.
So we treat it, yeah.
Now, sometimes, I think the hyperhidrosis is a single, like, direct current, but I'm not sure how. Mm-hmm. Not sure how that works.
I think it is, too, because it drives, you know, the hyper. The,
it goes in one direction, yeah, so it should be direct current.
Direct penetrating. And you know, a lot of times they will, especially in physical therapy offices, they'll put a little bit of steroid on it and drive the steroid in there, too.
Yeah. I know they do that for injuries. I don't know if they do that for sweating. But
not all the time. No, yeah, no. Yeah. If you do it at home, you don't, of course.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Lots of options.
Check that out.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Dr. Steve, is there a syndrome where someone could have, their testosterone could be too low to where natural supplements do not work?
Yeah, natural supplements don't work, period. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Absolutely.
Every syndrome where you have low testosterone, natural supplements don't work.
For ED or to raise the supplement, I know you talked about some good supplements.
Now, when I say natural supplements, I'm talking about quote-unquote natural supplements, meaning things that are sold in, say, you know, a health food store or something to boost testosterone. I have yet to see a single one of those that's got any data that's worth anything to bring your testosterone back to normal. The only thing I've seen, you know, double-blind placebo-controlled study quality data on for low testosterone is testosterone.
Yes, the actual medicine.
You know, and what you're trying to do is bring a low hormone back up to normal. And you can argue about what the best way to do that is. You know, we had a doctor on our podcast that said you need to have that swing. So they advocated shots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that because you don't really get a swing in, you know, physiologically. It's pretty constant level. I mean, it varies up and down, but there's no huge swings.
It's a diurnal swing, but it's not massive. It's a small.
Yeah. And you get a diurnal, meaning daily, swing through putting the gel on every morning because you get a peak in the morning and then you get a trough in the evening. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people of good intent can argue that particular point, but that really is the best treatment. Okay,
yeah, if you
here
think,
she is. What a surprise. Hold on. Tacy, you're on Weird Medicine.
Steve?
Yes.
I'm picking Liam up.
Okay, thank you. You're good.
Did you get my message?
No.
Taquazine, because Jill's coming.
Ooh, now that sounds good.
That sounds good.
We can just order Grubhub.
Yeah, let's do it.
And have it at the house when she gets there, because she's only going to be able to be there from like 6:45 to 8.
You got it. Let's do it.
So, okay. Well, I'll be home when after I pick him up, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, bye.
Love you. Hey, I was gonna make it.
So, we're doing grocery.
How many years? 10 years. 10 years and counting, and she still has not.
It's amazing. We're even recording at a weird time, and she calls in. What that really says is not so much that she knows when we're recording, because she doesn't.
No,
she just calls me that many times a day.
Yep.
And when I'm not complaining.
No complaints. It's just hilarious.
It's hilarious.
And then when we try to tell her something, it goes in one ear and out the other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, but real quickly, though, in going back to the low testosterone thing, different things work for different people. Certainly, you know, I tried the gels and did not work at all.
Yeah.
I try the shots, and the shots work extremely well.
Really?
The other thing, you know, pellets, sometimes people will go to certain doctors, and they'll actually do little pellets if you don't like the shots and you don't like the cream.
Yeah, that's called Testapel, and they have to calculate a dose, and they insert these under the skin, and then they last many months.
Yeah, 3 to 4 months, sure.
Is it only 3 to 4?
Three to four months, okay. Yeah. I mean, no, that's some of the pellets, but I'm sure there are some that last longer. But, okay. You know, I think there's a lot of great options. So, and I'm with you, Dr. Steve. I've never seen a great pure testosterone booster that is completely natural. Now, there may be one out there, and we just haven't heard of it. But
you were right. 3 to 4 months, sometimes up to 6 months.
Okay, yeah. But I'd have to see. I'd have to see some significant data. You know.
Yeah, I mean, DHEA has been posited as something, because it's a precursor of testosterone. Right. You have plenty of that floating around, though. And the issue with DHEA is it's also a precursor to estrogen.
Right.
So you can, and you can take this stuff, and it could be converted to estrogen and make you less manly. Mm-hmm. That can happen if you overdose on testosterone as well. Mm-hmm. That excess testosterone can be converted to estrogen, and you can get, you know, man boobs and stuff like that.
Which you do see a lot in them.
Please do this under
physician care.
Physician's care. I've seen bodybuilders that came in to their health care provider with a testosterone of zero.
Yep.
Because they just killed the system for making testosterone. So please do this under a physician's auspices, and do it based on a medical problem. I'm not a fan of juicing.
And I will tell you this.
I'll get bodybuilders who cuss me for that, but I'm not a fan. What can I say? Yeah. You know, it's...
But done well, it's a life changer.
Absolutely.
It's a life changer.
Absolutely. I'm on it. You're on
it.
Yeah,
I'm on it. Heck yeah.
Who else was on it in here? Was GVAC on it?
No. Maybe P.A. John.
It was P.A. John.
I think maybe John was.
I know at one time there was... Oh, and double vasectomy feces.
Right, and I want to say the Shyster.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. There was one time when almost all of us were on testosterone supplement.
Yeah, I think the Shyster was.
And it wasn't because of me.
No. Nope. Right. No.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Robert in Birmingham. I was just listening to the one where you were talking about starvation. So that on average it took 5 to 7 days, meaning half it took more, half it took less. Well, technically, that would be median, right? Not mean, just status checker.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Wondering which it actually was. Thanks.
Give yourself a bill. Give yourself a bill.
Uh-oh. Okay. So he's right. But in the special case, where it's a perfect bell curve, the mean and the median will be exactly the same. So let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. So let's say we have a set of numbers, 11, 23, 30, 47, 56. I'm getting this from vocabulary.com because I don't want to have to do the math in my head. The mean would be the arithmetic mean. Now, what that is you add up all the numbers and then you divide them by the total number of numbers. So we've got... five numbers, so you add them all up, it's 167 divided by 5 is 33. Now, the median would be the middle point of the number set where half of the numbers are above the median and half are below. So in this case, the median would be 30 because that's the midpoint of 11, 23, 30, 47, 56, okay? So now, if you had a set that was 1, 2, 98, 99, 100, 98 would be the median, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So because half the numbers are below and half are above.
Yeah.
The mean would be something different. Well, let's see. Hey, Alexa. What is 1 plus 2 plus 98 plus 99 plus 100? No clue if she knows how to do that.
Uh-oh. She's not working.
Alexa, say that again.
The answer to your calculation is 300.
Okay. So 300 divided by 5 would be 60, right? Right?
Right.
Yeah. So the mean and the median in that case would be vastly different. So now if you have a perfect bell curve, you could have the median and the mean be exactly the same number, but that's a special case.
Mm-hmm.
So he's right to point that out. I use that as shorthand. I'm always in my head seeing a bell curve, and so when I say the mean when I say the mean, that means roughly half of people will live long. Like if the mean survival is 14 weeks, for something, you'd think a half of people live longer than 14 weeks, half live less than 14 weeks. That's just shorthand. That is assuming a perfect bell curve, which, of course, they usually aren't. So,
right.
Okay. All right.
Hey, Dr. Steve. My name's Alex, calling from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Alex.
And I have a question more or less I'm asking on behalf of my girlfriend. We're both in our late 20s, and I have a question about NSAIDs. So I recently saw that the FDA strengthened their warnings for things like Advil.
Yeah.
That there is a greater increased risk of heart attack and stroke.
Yep.
But I'm not sure how this affects her, being that we're younger and we're not already at, you know, we're not already at risk. So during her period, she will take the max dosage for the first 2 days. So day one, she'll take 4 in the morning and then 2 that evening. And day 2, she'll take another 4 in the morning and then 2 that evening. And then day 3, and she's tapered off, maybe 1 that third day. But I'm not sure what risk she's putting herself under, being that we are young and healthy people. Does this warning only apply to the folks that are already at a risk for
heart disease?
God,
that's such a great question.
Is this something that taken consistently month over month can accumulate over the years and impact her down the road?
Beautiful question.
Well said. We could answer. We could do one. We could do an entire show answering.
That
levels,
is true.
The levels of this question. Yeah.
But I love how he asked the question: is it just for people who are already at risk?
Right.
And the answer to that is not really.
Not really. No, it's not.
These non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs are very important medications. Mm. They're widely used. They treat things like arthritis. And other painful conditions.
And
it's not a, yeah, fever and stuff like that. Yeah. Cardiovascular events are, it's not a new phenomenon. We know about that. We've known about it since 2006, particularly with the COX-2 inhibitors, which were things like celecoxib or Celebrex. But since then, they've done some important studies that look at the risk of thrombotic cardiovascular events like heart attack, in association with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And these drugs would include things like ibuprofen, naproxen, aspirin, although we use aspirin is a special case because we use it to prevent heart attack and stroke. Mm-hmm. It really isn't included in this. But it's very hard on the stomach, so yes, we don't advocate using a whole lot of aspirin for stuff. So these two studies, these big studies, looked at the risk of non-steroidals with cardiovascular events, and this is what they found. Very small increase in the risk of cardiovascular events that apply to all users of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, not only those with baseline cardiovascular risk factors. So that answers that one question. You don't have to have a previous risk factor. Now, I would love to see them drill down to see if those people had a larger risk than people that had no, because that makes sense.
Sure.
They found that there was a very small increase in the risk of cardiovascular events after relatively short-term NSAID use, and that increases with the increasing duration of use.
Mm-hmm.
And it was associated with very specific non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I gotta get this.
Oh.
No, I don't. where was I? After, in association with the following specific non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Number one, celecoxib or Celebrex at any dose.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, high-dose diclofenac.
Mm-hmm.
Who's on the – you know anybody on that?
Yes.
I know a few people.
Yes, I do.
And it would be greater than 150 milligrams per day, or high-dose ibuprofen at greater than 1,200 milligrams per day. So that would be
– right on the cusp of what she's taking her first period day.
Yeah, that's right.
Because she's taking 1,200 the first day she's having her menstrual cramps.
Right. So they identified it as being greater than 1,200.
Right. So.
So when you take ibuprofen over the counter, they recommend that you take 2 tablets.
They're usually 200 milligrams
apiece. They're 200 milligrams apiece. So that'd be 400. So you could do that for 3 times.
Right.
And then you're in that area.
Right.
No detectable effect on cardiovascular risk was demonstrated for naproxen at any dose.
Wow.
So I'm switching over to damn naproxen. I'll tell you that. I've always taken ibuprofen, and it works well for me. You know, if I feel achy from a fever or something like that, I'll take some ibuprofen, but I'm going to switch over to naproxen.
Yep.
So.
And I will say this, the sustained usage of those when you're not under, you know, proper health care can really be a dangerous thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of my friends, she wasn't under good care, and she had a heart attack when she was 35 years old from taking too much of these NSAIDs. She had a history of rheumatoid arthritis, was diagnosed in her early 20s, and because of the particular health care system she was under, she was stuck self-medicating. And after years of taking greater than 1,200 of ibuprofen every single day, or whatever it was she was taking. I don't want to throw ibuprofen on the bus, but she did. She, in fact, had a heart attack. And then 3 years later, had a second one. So now she has a pacemaker.
Wow.
And she's in her mid-40s. She's doing okay now, but it's certainly wonderful medications when used appropriately. You know, just because she is younger does not necessarily mean your wife is you know, doesn't have any, because the risk factors don't really have a whole lot to do with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I calculated the number needed to harm from their data. Mm. It was 333.
Okay.
So that means you'd have to, 333 people would have to take a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medicine to show
one event.
Extra adverse effect.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah, so she's probably pretty good. And buy her a water bottle, put on her tummy. That might help.
All right. Just be aware of the risk. It's all about mitigating risk, and that's what everything is about in this world.
Yep.
People who don't smoke still sometimes get lung cancer.
Right.
People who smoke three packs a day sometimes don't get lung cancer.
Yep.
But the people who don't smoke have reduced risk of getting it overall. And the people who do smoke have vastly increased risk.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you never know which group you're going to be in until it happens.
Right.
So it's just like, you know, if you're on the roulette table, which is the really, other than the Wheel of Fortune, that's the worst bet in the house. Mm-hmm. I used to teach casino gambling. So the VIG is around, you know, it's somewhat north of 5% against you.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll have people saying, well, I'm on a streak. You cannot ever say that be correct.
No.
You were on a streak. That's true. There are streaks.
Yeah.
But you can't ever say that you're on one because then that implies that you can predict what's going to happen next, and you can't. It's just a chance. But every once in a while you get that probability wave. You could win 10 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll say, "Oh, I'm on a streak." Well, you're wrong.
Mm.
And that you will make dumb mistakes if you think you are on a streak. And it's the same thing with people who are smoking cigarettes and going, "Well, I hadn't gotten sick yet."
Mm.
You know, it's the same as somebody jumping out of a window and then, you know, for the first 99 floors, they're going, "So far, so good, so far, so good."
I think I'm flying.
Yeah. So, all right. All right.
Hey, Dr. Steve, I need you to text me or call me back as soon as you can, please, if you can get this message. I'm on my way home from work to the hospital. I got a call from my wife. Our 12-month-old son, I guess, took a fall off the bed, and he started bleeding from the nose and throwing up. And they're at the hospital now. They haven't been there long enough to figure out what's going on.
Okay. This voicemail is like 4 months old. I'm just going to say, this is why you don't leave a voicemail if you got an emergency, because we won't get it for the longest time. If you have an emergency, call your doctor, call 911. Don't call weird medicine. But this is possibly a sign of a concussion. He may have hit his head, got some vomiting afterward. Always a good idea if you've got any kind of neurologic event with a sequelae like that, like double vision, nausea and vomiting, lethargy, anything like that, just go get seen. There's no harm in doing that, and may be a real benefit. The blood coming out of the nose may mean that he took a pretty good whack. Now, he could be bleeding so profusely that he's vomiting because the blood causes...
running down into his stomach.
Yeah, it causes irritation in the stomach, and those people will sometimes vomit too. Or he could have hyperventilated because he was crying so much and now he's vomiting. We don't know. Yeah. Get him checked out. You did the right thing.
Sounds like they're on the right
path. You did the right thing, and he called us on the way. He didn't delay anything. Right. So, all right.
Hope he's doing better.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Hey, I'm a 47-year-old diabetic truck driver, and I'm getting my ass back into shape.
Excellent.
So, you know, cardio, throwing some weights around, bicycle riding. My question to you is, will that help boost, like, the testosterone? Second, being diabetic, is there anything I can do, like, exercise-wise, to stop this whole, what you call the retro ejaculation? And three, doing sit-ups or crunches, every time I put any kind of pressure, you know, into my, abdomen, I have this lump that pops up, like a bump that comes up right in the middle of my stomach. And my question is, one.
What is it? Well, he has questions with sub-questions.
That's what we got here.
So, haven't been working out a muscle way too often. And you have the abdomen muscle. And two, plenty of, possibly, you know, while doing crunches, can I possibly, you know, hold that down with my hand and get it to stop popping up to where I can work around it?
Yeah, okay. So let's go backward to four. You wrote those down, right? Because I've already forgotten what the first two questions were.
The first one was the diabetes.
Well, but I mean, you wrote them down, right?
Testosterone.
Okay. So the last thing is he's got a ventral diastasis. And what a ventral diastasis is a separation of the muscles of the abdomen. You know, they come together and knit together, but it's just knitted together with a piece of connective tissue. And as you, if you get really fat, sometimes that that tissue will separate and you'll get sort of blooping up of abdominal contents into that. And it's usually, these things are really broad based. Mm-hmm. So people will go, oh, I've got a hernia. That's not necessarily, it is by the broadest definition a hernia, mm-hmm. in that something is passing through something that it's not supposed to pass through. Mm-hmm. But it really is something a little different than that, and it's a lot harder to deal with. And most of the time, the surgeons, I believe, say leave those alone. Mm-hmm. You might Google ventral diastasis and see if they've got any surgical stuff for that.
Yeah, I will.
And the other question was the retrograde ejaculation caused by his diabetes, and sadly, once that has set in, it's hard for it to return to normal again. What's going on there is he's had diabetes for so long and so severe that it's affected the nerves going to the sphincter that is supposed to reroute semen out of, you know, increase the pressure so that semen will pass out of the end of the penis instead of passing into the bladder. And there's a sort of an area where these things can mix. And if you don't shut that back valve down, semen will follow the path of least resistance into the bladder. We diagnose this by having someone ejaculate, and then we have them pee into a cup. And if nothing comes out of their penis when they ejaculate, but there's tons of sperm cells in the urinalysis, then that makes the diagnosis of retrograde ejaculation. Now, certainly getting better glucose control and keeping it that way, maybe over time there could be some healing of this, but a lot of times that's a done deal. But it's still worth doing because getting excellent blood sugar control will prolong your life. And I suspect that if you're having retrograde ejaculation, you may have erectile dysfunction as well. And standard medications for that should work, like Cialis or Viagra or Levitra. So,
especially after he gets his testosterone back up.
Yeah.
Diabetes down.
And then what was his first question? Was about testosterone?
Well, it was, and it was the diabetes and the testosterone. And
okay, if he works out.
Losing weight. And
yes, that should improve, but he needs to have it tested after that just to make sure that he's at the normal level. And if he's not at a normal level, he'll need some testosterone replacement therapy. And that certainly would be beneficial to him on all of those grounds, including the working out and losing weight burn.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find anything on ventral diastasis?
Yeah. The bottom line is in one of the PubMed articles was comparing a surgical intervention versus physical therapy
yep.
type stuff, and they're about the same. The side effects from the surgery can be pretty
sure.
severe, and because it's a pretty big surgery. And what they're suggesting is try physical therapy, someone that has some experience on how to help you work the rectus muscle and without making the bulge worse. And certainly if it were to...
You're looking at the article that's the general surgeon's perspective of rectus diastasis. Is that the one?
No, the one I
found. Because it says the same thing.
Yeah, no, but it was similar, but this okay. is on PubMed.
This one, well, this is PubMed.
General surgeon's perspective on
it's the same article.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
looking at that yeah. as well. Okay.
So the bottom line is, yeah, if you can deal with it, that's a good thing.
Yeah, they can yeah. do surgery.
Absolutely.
On it.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in pursuing that, certainly see your primary care. Let them get you evaluated. There are, you know, we haven't seen it. I don't know how big it is, how extensive it is. Mm-hmm. If it's narrow based and you've got bowel contents coming out, then that's a true
that's
hernia.
A major
that's
issue,
a big
right?
that's a big difference.
Right.
So that's got to be fixed.
Yep.
So, all right. What else? Let's see. What can we do in 1 minute?
Dance. No, probably not.
Hi, Dr. Steve. So I have a question.
This is your
about
friend.
Vivid yeah. dreams. So I've been studying like really, really, really hard for like the past 10, 12 months. For some really important examinations, and during this period of time, I've been just having these really hyper crazy vivid dreams.
Okay, we're out of time. That happens when your mind is occupied and you've been hyper focused, and then you start having. You have weird disruptions of your sleep architecture, and you'll have these weird dreams. A lot of times they're related to what you're dealing with. And when your exams are over and you start to relax, take a vacation, all that stuff should go away.
Anyway, yeah,
all right. All right. Thanks always go to Dr. Scott. And we can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, Eric Nagel, Roland Campo, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel. SiriusXM, channel 103, Saturdays at 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern, I'm not sure which. Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern on demand and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. And go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.